Hello and welcome to episode 199 of Speak Beastie for March 17th, 2024. I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon.
And I'm sad.
Oh, I was going to say Happy St. Patrick's Day.
No! I mean, yes, also have a St. Patrick's Day, Happy St. Patrick's Day, or just have a St. Patrick's Day, I don't know. But I'm sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all just a party. It's a celebration. It's not the end of anything. Okay.
You're right.
Yeah.
Let's just all go swim in the green rivers and...
We're just taking a potentially very long hiatus.
Yeah. But this isn't the last episode. We still have one more to go for episode 200.
No. And it's just the last time the four of us are recording together.
Yeah.
Sad face.
So sad.
But, to... keep myself from tearing up here on this podcast because that would be embarrassing. I will say that we have started putting stuff together and laying down groundwork for episode 200. It's going to be a ball.
Yes.
So much fun. It's going to be silly. It's going to be a celebration. It's going to be really, it's going to be great.
If you're in our common room, and haven't checked Facebook in a bit, you need to go check.
Yeah.
Participate
in
something.
And if you happen to be a patron, you also should have seen something in your feed on Patreon that has something to do with episode 200. And speaking of somebody who probably got that notification. This episode is sponsored by Speak Beastie Patreon supporter Jamie. Thank you for your support, sticking with us through the end, and, you know, doing whatever mysterious thing may have dropped in your inbox within the last couple of days. I don't know.
So mysterious, but thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, Jamie.
That's so cool.
Now Jamie's thinking, like, oh, I actually have to do that.
Call out.
Okay.
So... we are still waiting for the big news in the Phoenix Register that will cancel. I don't know.
Cancel the cancel.
This episode drops I can't remember. It's like March
17th.
No, this episode is not. I know this episode. Yeah. Our final episode drops the 31st.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So then, oh my God, that'll be April 1st. Can you imagine April 1st they announce the fourth movie?
No, they can't announce it on April 1st.
Please don't mess with us, WB. I don't think we can take it. We're too fragile at this point.
Or maybe we will say on April 1st, oh no, it was a big April Fool. We are back. We don't know what we will talk about. But we will be back.
Just listen to us just talk about life for 2 hours.
We're just an animal podcast now.
Yeah, now we just share, Amy talks about Luna, I talk about Junie, Shannon talks about Ducky, everyone else just talks about their pets.
Yeah.
Sure, but so while you are waiting for this great April 1st announcement, we still have a bit of news in the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt's Commander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
Not directly Fantastic Beasts related, but some things that are, I think, interesting for the future or not, we will see. Well. But we have some little news about the Harry Potter series, and David Zaslav, don't know how to pronounce it, I don't want to know how to pronounce it, don't care, I don't like it.
So he's nobody to us.
So it's the CEO. He's the CEO of WB Discovery, and he said that we can expect the new Harry Potter series for 2026, or at least they are aiming for a premiere in 2026. So it means that they should move forward soon. He said he can't wait to share a decade of new stories, so I don't really know if we can call a retelling of the book's new stories, but we see. So yeah, like I said, I don't trust him. But we heard that they are, I think we mentioned that earlier in an early episode, but for now the rumors are that they are still three candidates to be showrunners. Mm-hmm. So no official announcement concerning the crew and showrunners. Yeah. But we'll see. Yeah, if they want to have a series for 2026, they should have a showrunner soon, because that's not that far.
2026 is definitely ambitious.
I think I saw something that, like, they would be announced in June. Like, they're going to be signing the showrunner in June. Let me look, because a lot of stuff comes across my Facebook feed, and not all of it is true.
Well,
yeah, mm-hmm. I thought I saw that they were, like, pitching their approaches, like, within the next month or so. But mm-hmm. I don't remember where I saw that timeline either.
Yeah, so we see it's still possible that they move from retelling of the books and they are doing real new stories. That's still possible. We don't know.
I hope they Riverdale it. I hope it's Riverdale style.
Oh my god, so you just want everybody just, like, to be really sexy.
Oh my god, no.
Yeah, and it's just like, there's, I don't know, I haven't watched Riverdale, but there should be, I think there's, like, time travel.
Musical episode!
Oh, no.
Musical episode, for sure. And it kind of ends with polyamory, but then they break up. So, I'm into it.
I'm here for it.
And I want an animated series, so, yeah.
That's true, too. Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Yeah, that would solve the casting problem. So that's, yeah.
For sure.
Should be easier, I think. But yeah, so that's all we know for now for this series. But in another news, still not really Fantastic Beasts related, but I wanted to mention the event announced for to the Harry Potter Studio Tour in Lifton. Because they are celebrating the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And it's the movie
that's not 20 years old.
It is. Like,
oh my god.
I didn't come out here to be attacked like this. Jeez.
Yeah, and for me, it's probably, of all the movies that it's the most Beast-related, because... Uh-huh. There are a lot of beasts in this movie, so yeah, and it's the best of the
movie. It was always my favorite book and favorite movie.
Yeah, same. So connecting. I was very excited when they said that they were doing a full event around this movie, and they are not disappointing me, because there are a lot of new sections. We will have the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom. Set for Lupin class about the Bogarts. And but the fact that I'm not very excited is that what they chose to put in the classroom is the big scary clown in the box.
Which,
I don't want to see that, but well. And we will also have the original bed from the Leaky Cauldron, the Leaky Cauldron bedroom where Harry is staying, with the Monster Book of Monsters in action. So you will have the book moving around the room. Oh, so that's fun. And so less beastie related, we will have the Nightbus interior, because we already have the Nightbus in the exterior part of the tour, but we will now have a version where you can see the interior, and it will recreate the effect of Annie's very not safe driving. With it will be moving around with the chandelier and the bed moving inside the set. So very, very fun. And we also have Trelawney's divination classroom. So very a lot of things. I'm guessing some of it will be permanent, and maybe the smaller one will be just for the event. But yeah, the specific event is between May 1st and September 4th of this year. So
nice.
Yeah, I wasn't planning to go back there, but now I'm considering it because that's my favorite movie, so I want to see all of that. But yes,
sorry, still I guess no. You're gonna have to go back to the UK. Sorry.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh darn.
You need to. So yeah, that's it for the news. I didn't find any other more specific news. But still exciting because yeah, that's the Monster Book of Monster, the Bogarts, it's still beast or creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's something.
Sounds cool.
Yeah.
Well, I don't believe we have any Owl Post today.
No.
And your opportunities to send it into us are growing rapidly limited. So if you have any thoughts about pretty much anything related to Fantastic Beasts, send it in. Please, please send it in. We would love to hear it.
And the owls will all be going to good homes.
That's right.
They're not simply being fired.
Nope, we are not sending them to a farm upstate.
No.
We are, however, going to move into our main discussion, which is Fantastic Beasts, Easter Eggs at Universal, and Other Magical Creatures at Theme Parks Around the World.
Love this.
I know, because there's so many cool magical creatures that you can see at different theme parks, and we haven't really discussed it, so I figure it's the penultimate episode, why not? Let's just get weird and talk about dragons for an hour or so, you know?
Yeah. Sounds like our usual recordings.
Isn't that just what we do?
And I want to say it's also a way for us to plan our next adventure together.
Yes.
So
yeah.
So to start with, these are all at Universal Orlando. I didn't really dig into what's over at Universal Hollywood because a lot of the stuff that's in Universal Orlando is going to be duplicated in Universal Hollywood. I also didn't really mention anything at Universal Osaka because we've already discussed the magical creatures you can experience there pretty in depth. Mm-hmm. But at Universal Orlando, you can hear the Thestrals pulling the horseless carriage at Hogsmeade by the Hogwarts Express.
Oh. So you don't see them, but you can hear sounds?
Yeah, so like when you're when you get off the Hogwarts Express in Hogsmeade, you pass by what appears to be a horseless carriage, but if you stand by it for a little bit, you can hear the Thestrals like pawing at the ground and making like snoring noises, basically indicating that there's something there, you just can't see it.
Cool.
It's kind of Haunted Mansion up there.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
In the Apothecary and Diagon Alley, there is a shark jaw in the window, and that is a reference to the Jaws ride that Diagon Alley replaced, so you can go see a big old shark jaw.
Yeah, R.I.P.
R.I.P. Jaws.
You had a very interesting history all your own.
Not that this just makes me think of the first time I went to Universal. It was for our first anniversary. Chris's parents took us there, and I rode the Jaws ride, and I was so scared about my phone. Because I was like, oh, we're gonna get wet, my phone, and then it was fine. You don't get that wet on Jaws.
No.
That makes me think that this Shark Joe thing, I don't think we heard about shark like Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We heard about a lot of sea monsters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess the closest would maybe be like the Remora, but that's not really a shark like creature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That would be interesting to have. Because there are so many legends and culture representation around the globe connected to sharks that, sure, they should have some magical version of sharks. I don't know, but I'm remembering that because I studied Oceanian culture at some point, and specifically in the Solomon Islands, they have a lot of cultural thing around sharks, and they have this beautiful sharks thing where they put the remains of the ancestors, and they are black with silver details, and they are very, very beautiful, and they have a lot of culture around the fact of hunting sharks, but at the same time being protected by the sharks. It's very fascinating. So they are magical sharks in some culture, and we need to have them in Fantastic Beasts.
I feel like they would at least be like, oh yeah, megalodons are still around and they're magical, and you just don't see them because they turn invisible through time holes or whatever.
Yeah. Mm. Like how the deer caller, the dodo.
Or like, God, was it, not Harry Potter, but like an Outlander. The reason that the Loch Ness Monster just seems to pop up randomly is because it goes through time vortexes, like what's her face, Claire goes through. I'm sorry, I didn't like Outlander. I know, that's a hot take, but.
I was gonna add, there are other references to the Jaws ride.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, like.
Just Jaws in general, but not specifically about the sharks, so who cares?
Well, yeah, I know there's like the record and the. I care because I really enjoyed the Jaws ride, but.
Yeah. The bathrooms, it's the same bathrooms, so. You go to the Diagon Alley bathrooms, then you go into the Amity Island bathrooms.
Oh, that's fine.
Repainted. Yeah, there's a telescope in Wiseacres that's supposedly made out of parts of a boat, but I don't know if that's true.
Hmm.
So, for the Jaws fans.
In the New York area of Universal Studios, this is the most direct, but I think it's the only like true Fantastic Beasts movies Easter egg, and it's not there anymore. There used to be an entrance to the Blind Pig in the New York area of Universal Studios.
Yes, cool. I've put in my photo from it. So it was there for the Harry Potter celebration in 2017. I don't know how long it was left up.
It was not there in September of 2017, because when I was there for 19 years later, I spent probably a 45 minutes in the New York area looking for it, and it was not there. So it was gone by September.
Yeah. I wish they left it.
It might have just been up for the weekend.
That would have been like, it seems it fits so easy. So
It's
like just such a fun
little thing. And it fits with the brick around.
Yeah, because this is just like a door that already exists. Mm-hmm. A little at the bottom of some stairs. So you can still go to the spot where it was.
Photoshop it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, Photoshop yourself, like, turning it where
you print your version and you put it on the place, like, there you go.
Next time I go to Orlando, I'm just gonna bring a big Blind Pig poster. I'm gonna paste it up.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be worth it. Let me see here. So in, I think this is in Diagon Alley at the Menagerie. There is a big snake that if you to hang out by it long enough will speak parcel tongue to you.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And the Magical Menagerie in general, I mean, it sells plushies. But so it's very, there's lots of little creature guys, but the snake is really cool.
There's a like a snorkak there or something, right? Like a crumblehorn snorkak?
Yes.
I think
it's like if you look up, there's a bunch of cages and things up like in the rafters.
Yeah.
And then there's also a Neasel.
Yes. And
there's the Flooper in the window, like, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's like, what is in the window? It's the Flooper. And the ones in the windows like kind of move, but the snake is the one that kind of does the most. It's a cool little shop. Definitely got to go there if you go.
Oh yeah, no, all the shops are cool, but the Magical Menagerie I think is probably one of the best themed and most fun.
It's also like compared to some of the other shops, like a good size. Mm-hmm. It's kind of set away from the other shops, so it doesn't get as crowded. Well, and also probably it's a lot of adults are like, well, that's just plushies. And I'm like, yeah, that's plushies.
That's where I'm going to be.
Let's go.
And at Borgin and Burke's in Nocturne Alley, there is a boggart in a chest. So I believe it's towards the back of the store. If you look under a table, there is a chest that's kind of rattling around. So there's a boggart in there. So look out. You might get a giant clown jack-in-the-box thing.
There's also, this is very Harry Potter, but there's the vanishing cabinet.
You can hear a little bird.
Draco's birds.
I love Borgin and
Burke's. Those are just some regular animals.
Such a cool store. Like, they did such a good job theming it.
They did. Whenever I want to go in there, Chris is like, do we have to go into Wizard Hot Topic? And I'm like,
yes!
Yes, we do have to go into Wizard Hot Topic, Chris!
There used to be this one team member who worked there. And he was so good at his job. Like, this guy got into character. And he'd always be, like, walking around with a spider plushie and, like, just, like, stroking it. And he'd, like, sneak up behind people and stuff.
No!
I was so sad when he was no longer there because he was great.
Amy, did you want to talk about these bits that you added in, or would you like me to talk about them?
Sure! I just added in... Of course, there's the dragon on top of Gringotts. We can't forget our beautiful dragon that roars and breathes fire.
I remember asking a team member in, like, Wiseacres, one of the nearby shops, like, how often does the dragon breathe fire? And they were just like, I don't know, whatever she wants. It's like,
good answer.
Great, okay. Yeah. Supposedly, the spot where the dragon breathes fire corresponds approximately to where an explosion was in the Jaws ride. So,
oh, how cool is that?
That's fun.
Yeah. Oh,
huh.
Yeah.
But yeah, love the dragon. Dragon is everything.
Yes,
can't go to Diagon Alley without taking a picture of a dragon.
It's true. You literally, it's the law.
Yeah.
So then I also wanted to talk about all of the creatures on Hagrid's motorbike adventure, because there's a ton. Like, if you've been on that ride...
What's the full name of this ride?
Hmm?
The ride has a longer name than that. It's very annoying.
It's like Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure or something like that, isn't it?
I think so.
Yes, that's correct.
It's obnoxiously long.
It's so silly.
I feel like it really needs more colons, like Hagrid presents Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure the ride.
Super fun, magical, crazy.
I do hate how often I hear, like, I'm gonna go ride Hagrid.
Yeah.
Probably need context for this.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
But yeah, if you've been on the ride, the queue itself has so much in it. And it's obviously magical creature themed, because that's kind of like
the deal with the ride. So when you first get in the queue and you're in like the outdoor area around Hagrid's hut, there's this small little like carved wooden hippogriff figure thing there that's sort of like tucked back in the trees. So that's something to look out for. Super cute. It's like very like primitive like carving thing. And then once you cross over the bridge into the ruins, there's a mermaid and Grindylow sculpture that's like in the rock wall. And when you go into the ruins, inside the walls, there's a bunch of graffiti on the walls, and there's actually like a ton of drawings of creatures, which is pretty cool. So there is a hippogriff drawing, and underneath it says, "Watch out, Malfoy, there's hippogriff behind you." There's also two dragons, the red one and the blue one, which represents the Dragon Challenge coaster that was there before Hagrid's. So that's there.
Rest in pieces.
There's an Alchemy, a Flooper, unicorns. There is a werewolf. And I love that there's a little graffiti writing that says, "Woof," and there's an arrow pointing towards the werewolf.
I do want to say I love how much Flooper representation is there. I mean, it's yeah. like there's two Flooper things in Diagon Alley, but just considering they're not, like, really in the movies.
Yeah. They're just so fun. They're like, goofy
these
looking.
Guys look cool.
Yeah. And then there's some centaurs and thestrals as well. So then when you go into this room where the pre-show plays, sometimes it plays, sometimes it doesn't, depending on the length of the line. But right after that room, there's a fireplace, and there's little salamander footprints in the fireplace where all our little salamanders were scampering about.
Cool.
And then the absolute worst room to get stuck in, the hatchery. Where it gets really hot, and it's just a winding line back and forth, and it's, like, the worst place to get stuck. I've been stuck in there for, like, an hour before.
It's like
before.
The greenhouses on Hogwarts.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
It's so bad. But, yeah, in the hatchery, there's obviously a lot of eggs all around. There's some alchemy shells. We get another alchemy drawing on the wall. And then there's this really large tentacle that's drawn on the wall coming down from the ceiling. Which I think maybe it's supposed to be like the giant squid, possibly. Kind of looks like a squid tentacle. And there's some really cool Mina Lima posters as well that like detail the different eggs and the different sizes and what the shells look like. And then after you go through the hatchery, through the caves, and you get to Hagrid's workshop, there's a bunch of creature posters on the walls, and there's one for the Niffler, salamanders, unicorns, Cornish pixies, blast-ended Scroot, and manticore. And then
so what the manticore looks like in these posters?
It's got like the lion head kind of
okay
vibe, yeah, and like the like club tail,
a real manticore.
Yeah. Yeah, not the weird little like crab guys. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And then we have the Monster Book of Monsters is open to the fire crab and manticore pages.
Okay, I just looked up, because, spoiler alert, I haven't ridden Hagrid, because I don't like roller coasters.
Gasp.
I will ride it, but I haven't yet, but I just looked up this manticore poster, and it is weird.
I actually looked it up as well. It is really weird.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of looks like a thick human man. With the mane and a scorpion tail.
I'm going to post it in the chat so y'all can see it, because it is deeply bizarre.
But more accurate than the manticore, quote-unquote, right? Fantastic piece.
Yeah.
And the Monster Book of Monsters manticore page is less weird.
I'm looking at that. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, it's just like a guy.
And I'm sure there's other things too in Hagrid's workshop that I'm missing. There's a lot going on in there. There's stuff in jars. I feel like there's a dragon egg, but I could be wrong. I could be misremembering. But yeah, there's a lot going on in there.
It seems like something he would have.
Yeah. And then on the ride itself, we obviously get a lot of creatures. So right at the beginning, you have the unicorn and its baby. There's Cornish pixies that are like flying around the Fort Anglia when you see the Fort Anglia. There's centaurs when you go into the Forbidden Forest. There's a big fluffy animatronic. And then there's the blast-ended Scroot animatronic too.
When Podcast The Ride did their episode about Hagrid's, they were all so confused about what the blast-ended Scroot was. Like, what is that thing with the rainbow butt? What is going on?
Yeah, I mean, that's the correct reaction.
Yeah, right? Because,
I mean, yeah.
Wizards honestly. Too, well, what the f*** is this?
That's pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to ride the ride.
Well, when we do our group trip for Epic Universe in January 2026, I will not ride it, but Chris will probably ride it with you.
Yeah, I want to do it, and I want to... I mean, I know it. You can spend a lot of time in a queue, but there is so much thing in the queue. So
yeah, no, like, I haven't. I remember I've only been on it once in 2019, and I remember being amazed by the queue. It was so good.
So I will say, if you're afraid of roller coasters, I'm not a roller coaster person either, and I forced myself to go on it. And honestly, it does not bother me like other roller coasters do. And I think it's just because of how smooth it is.
It is really
like
smooth.
You don't get the rattling. It's super fast.
That's what I'm like, I could have never ridden Dragon Challenge.
No way.
Oh my god, I rode that
like,
once.
No way.
Nope.
I don't do upside down. I don't do super rattly tracks.
No.
But even like the first drop on Hagrid's, it is pretty steep, but I don't get the drop in my stomach on it. So it's very, I think it's because it's so fast, you don't get as much of that, like, G-force stuff going on.
I did add, over in Hogsmeade, the main ride is Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, and on that ride are some Acromantula and a dragon.
Yes.
I believe that's it. You walk through, like, the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom, and it's got, you know, it's
the big dragon skeleton,
You see the basilisk skeleton on the ride too, right?
Right. And
the Dementors.
In the greenhouses, you walk past...
Mandrakes?
Help me. Yes, mandrakes. I was like, ah!
Screaming babies!
On the ride, I had to look up like what happens on the ride before I rode it, because I am very afraid of spiders. So I have never seen the Acromantula. But that is where the ride photo is taken. So I have some funny looking ride photos. Because my eyes are closed.
So, our ride photos, I look appropriately terrified. Chris looks charmed.
Of course.
Like, look at those big friends!
And yeah, of course there's a dragon.
Oh,
there's gotta be a dragon on every ride. Well, and we did mention the hippogriff ride where you're riding a hippogriff.
I forgot about Flight of the Hippogriff because like that was a one and done.
Yeah, it's more of a like I don't want to say like a kiddie coaster.
It is a kiddie coaster though. Like it's it's like 30 seconds long.
But yet every time I get it, I'm amazed at how fast it is and how dizzy I am.
It and Dragon Challenge were both there before it was Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And I believe Flight of the Hippogriff was a unicorn ride.
I think you are right.
But yeah, so you pass a hippogriff animatronic, and then you're on like a wicker basket hippogriff. It's not that incredibly themed, but
no, but it's cute. And it's cute. If it's yeah. like if there's no way, you know, it's a fun little ride.
It's, I mean, I guess it's probably one of the roller coasters I've ridden the most.
I don't know if I apologize if I've told this story before, but when we were in Orlando for Princess last year, Shannon very kindly joined us for a day in Epcot, and we got all the way through the queue for Guardians.
Yes.
We're in the room before we're about to load. Shannon goes, nope.
I was like, no, actually, never
mind. So we've been in this queue for like an hour. And then they're just like, nope, I'm done. And so I'm like, okay, well, can you please take Stella Lou? So they take Stella Lou. And as they're leaving, they say to the cast member, oh, no, it's because of her. She's too scared to ride. Yeah, I'm
like, the little just plushie. Saving face. No.
Yeah. The little she's stuffed bunny can't do it.
Yeah, that's exactly like when you have a kid with a plushie. Like,
exactly.
Oh, no, it's not me. It's the plush who is scared.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Guardians of the Galaxy, the queue itself is not much, but the pre-show,
oh, yeah,
pretty
the
cool.
No, like, the queue is cool, and the pre, but yeah, you're like, I don't know. I felt like I missed a lot of the story of it being the Xandar Pavilion at Epcot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, speaking of Disney parks.
Yeah, speaking of Disney parks, we are now moving on to other theme parks and the Fantastic Beasts you can meet there. Like
lots of cool creatures.
A dragon under the castle at Disneyland Paris.
Yeah!
I'm so mad, because when I went to Disneyland Paris, I was like, I gotta see this dragon, but the caves closed early.
Aww.
And I didn't know that, and so then it was like, let's go see the dragon, and it was closed.
Yeah, it always close early because they need to put the fireworks. So
oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it was recently like refurbished, like last year or something. But no big changes.
No, that's a classic for
And it's not, you know, it's Sleeping Beauty Castle, but it's not like Maleficent's dragon. Like it's not a
It's Merlin's dragon.
Disney dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
connected to Merlin. I don't know the exact.
But it's not like from the animated Sword in the Stone.
No.
It's just.
Because from the cave, so you can enter to the cave on two spots, one from the side of the castle, and the other one is from the shop, the Merlin shop. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a. But yeah, so cool, very atmospheric with the big dragon moving slowly and sleeping and sometimes awakening and breathing smoke and yeah, that's
yeah,
very
and
cool.
So it's a walkthrough, so you can kind of you know, take your time to
check it out, look at the watch the dragon, get some pictures of it in front of it, be looking scared.
I gotta get back there.
You do. Disneyland Paris is such a great park. It's so great.
I love it. I love the castle. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, we have the most beautiful castle.
You do.
Maybe not the most amazing park, but yeah, the most beautiful castle. Definitely.
Yeah.
And the best haunted mansion. Like,
yeah.
That's true. It's a cool haunted mansion. It's unique. Phantom Manor.
Yes.
Yes.
Marjo, any other beasts at Disneyland Paris that I didn't mention here?
I was thinking about it, but I couldn't think of much. I think
Disney.
That's the only dragon, and I couldn't think of other.
There is the 20,000 Leagues walkthrough, and you could see the. Squid, although they changed that, I think.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's still there. It's still there.
Okay.
You can still see the squid. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, your giant squid in the Nemo.
Which is,
So you have that, and.
There's the Ratatouille ride.
Yeah, but I don't know if that counts.
I don't know. Remy is a magical creature, I think.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think
we have a lot of Fantastic Beasts in this park.
Okay. Are there... No, I think I am misremembering. I was thinking maybe they were like tiny mermaids in the Storyland canal boats, but I might be getting that mixed up with the Disneyland version.
Mm. I don't know. There could be.
Yeah, no, probably they are, but it's been a while since
I
don't remember. Yeah. No, I don't remember.
Well, so then we've got our Yeti friends.
Yes, so you've got Frank the Yeti at Disneyland on the Matterhorn, and then the Disco Yeti at Animal Kingdom and Expedition Everest.
Yes, so, but she has a name, and I'll look it up. But the Matterhorn Yeti is white, and Expedition Everest Yeti is brown.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you can tell the difference.
Also, one and you're in California, and the other one is
well, yeah. Yes.
There's that, too.
Betty the Yeti.
Betty!
And that's people, so cute! Throw their hair ties as a offering to Betty the Yeti.
that's the hair ties. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it called the Disco Yeti yet?
Okay, Shannon, take it away.
Okay, so when the ride was built, this was like 2005-ish. It was very highly advertised as like the most advanced animatronic ever. And it's this giant Yeti that's kind of partially like hanging from the ceiling that can swipe its arm at you. And it worked properly for like 2 months, and then it was discovered that the Yeti was too advanced and was breaking the foundation of the mountain. So they had to switch it to B mode, which means it doesn't move, but to give it the appearance of movement, they have a strobe light on it.
Ah, okay.
So everybody calls it the Disco Yeti because supposedly to, like, it's not broken, the mountain's broken, but yeah, to quote-unquote fix it, they'd have to, like, take the mountain apart, which would be very difficult and expensive. Although, Joe Rohde, who's the mastermind behind Animal Kingdom, did swear once that he was going to fix the Yeti. Then he left Disney.
Then he retired.
So I'm still holding out hope. But no, yeah, we call it the Disco Yeti because it's in B mode and it's got a strobe light.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's very scary.
Is
even
it?
Even if it's not moving. Well, I don't. Maybe I'm just like, oh, I'm on a roller coaster. It sucks.
Every time I've seen her, I'm just like, sup.
I mean, I love her.
I heard that this coaster is quite intense, right?
It's, like, yeah. I normally don't do coasters, but I can do Expedition Everest. And
it is, like,
I don't know, I think it's because it doesn't go upside down.
Yeah.
It is
high up.
The drop is intense.
The drop is pretty intense.
And I'll say, I think the last time I rode it, it was, like, a very cold day. Cold evening in February, because it was an after-hours event. And so you go up high, and you're moving on this fast coaster, so I just had, like, tears streaming down my face.
I mean, if you are supposed to be on the Everest mountain, that's...
Yeah.
I mean, sure. It adds to the immersion, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and it has a beautiful view of Animal Kingdom.
Oh my gosh, it does have a view. You can see like the Tower of Terror, and you can see the parking lots. You get to see this, like, big, like, panoramic view
for,
of,
like,
Orlando.
20 seconds.
Yeah.
So, not, I mean, you know, it's a great ride.
Talking about Expedition Everest just made me think it's not a fantastic beast, but I think it's a pretty fantastic beast. There is a mention of red pandas in the queue of Expedition sure. Everest, and there's a picture, and it's really cute.
Yeah, obviously Animal Kingdom has a lot of real animals.
Yes.
Speaking of which,
yes, there's also Dino Sue at Animal Kingdom. So, bit of backstory. 1991, an archaeologist, I should have looked this up beforehand, her name is Sue Hendricks. She found the largest, most complete T-Rex skeleton ever in a riverbank, I believe in Utah. And there was obviously a massive bidding war for the skeleton. because everyone wants to display the biggest, most complete T-Rex skeleton. So the Disney Corporation threw in its lot with the Field Museum here in Chicago so that basically the deal was, you guys get the skeleton, we get a replica to put up at Animal Kingdom. So Field was like, all right. And so they worked together, and now Dino Sue is at the Boneyard in Animal Kingdom with a plaque basically explaining what I just told you. And then you can also see the original actual skeleton of Sue in Field Museum here in Chicago.
Cool.
I saw her.
You did see Sue. I dragged you to Sue's suite. I was like, look, there's Sue. They're great.
I loved it.
It is funny, though, because as science has moved forward and we've found out more things about T-Rexes, the Sue skeleton at Field has changed pretty drastically, because now they've discovered that T-Rexes had these lower ribs called gastralia. And so they weren't like these really upright, lean dinosaurs. They were kind of thick, like kind of chunky looking. And so you go and see Sue at Field, and Sue's, you know, kind of chunky looking and adorable and great. And then you go to Disney, and it's still like Sue as they were in the 90s. So it's still that older idea of T-Rexes. So it's fun to go back and be like, hey, wait a minute.
Dinosaurs, man.
This is our last trip, Chris and I were there. I was kvetching at Chris because on the plaque at Animal Kingdom, they actually misgender Sue. Because, I know, because obviously you can't know Sue's sex because it's a dinosaur. But the Sue that is on Twitter, which is at Sue the T-Rex, pro follow if you still use Twitter, they use they/them pronouns because they are an NB icon. That. But on the plaque at Animal Kingdom, they use she/her, and I'm like, no, this is incorrect.
They're just differences.
Maybe old 90s Sue is she/her.
That was before Sue explored her gender.
Anyway, so moving on from Sue, even though I never want to move on from Sue, I could talk about Sue all day. Sue's so great. This could be a whole podcast by itself. It has been whole podcasts on other podcasts. Way back when Animal Kingdom was still under construction and being, if you look at the logo for it, it's like a lion, a rhino, a bunch of real animals, and then a dragon, right?
Yeah.
That's because one of the areas in Animal Kingdom was supposed to be Beastly Kingdom, which was gonna be like a fantasy area.
Ooh. And they ran out of money, basically, and they were like, okay, do we build Dino Land or Beastly Kingdom? And they were like, Dino Land will be cheaper. So they built that. But they did have every intention of eventually building Beastly Kingdom. And, like, for the first couple years of Animal Kingdom, there was a dragon, not, like, an animatronic, but it was, like, a cave where dragon smoke came out of on a boat ride. And it was like, yeah, we're going to have Beastly Kingdom someday. And then we didn't.
And then they built Pandora. And I will die mad about it.
Yeah, Pandora is pretty cool. If you're not familiar with Pandora, it's based on the Blue Avatar movies. Which, who cares about those? Apparently a lot of people, I don't know. But it's a really cool land with some cool, you know, on the rides, cool, like, creature things. But you can ride an Ikran, which is on Flight of Passage, and then the other ride just has cool, you know, they're alien beasts, but they're cool.
Yeah, but they're cool. And like, one of the things that Joe Rohde talked about when they were designing, it's not Navi Small World, it's Navi River Journey.
Navi Small World.
Was that it's a dark ride. The point is, he talked about how when he was designing the ride, to make sure that there was always something happening in the foreground, the middle ground, and the background. That way, no matter where you were looking, there was always. So when you're going through Navi River Journey, you can look anywhere in the set and see some kind of Pandoran creature scampering around. There's one kind, I don't know what they're actually called. They're like these little airborne jellyfish.
Mm-hmm.
I call them Narcomoebas because they look like Narcomoebas from Magic the Gathering. And they're really just like these little guys floating around in the air. Like just kind of like vibing.
Will-o'-the-wisps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, I loved the first Avatar. I was obsessed with that when it came out. And I remember there was like a filter that you could use in the official website where you can play on the camera with this little jellyfish thing.
Oh, cute!
And I spent so many time playing with it on my webcam, on my phone. It was, I love it.
Then when you come to Florida, we have to ride Flight of Passage because you will Flight lose of your mind.
It is such a cool ride. It's so good. And I'm a big lover of Soarin', and so Flight of Passage is kind of like, what if we took Soarin' and then just went bigger?
Yeah.
It's very cool. I did, just to move back to dinosaurs.
Yes, please.
Dinosaur the ride in Animal Kingdom, in Dinoland, that's my Roman Empire. I think about
this ride. Why do you think about it so much?
I don't know. I just find the ride and the film Dinosaur so fascinating because they built Dinoland and this ride in part because they knew they were going to make this movie, but it opened 2 years before the movie was released. And then when the movie was released, they were like, okay, now we can just like tweak the ride a little bit to be the movie. And so they made the ride less intense, and if you've ridden Dinosaur,
no.
You know that it's intense, so that it would be a little bit more family-friendly, and it's just so... I just find the history of it so fascinating. The movie... The history of the movie is so weird. It's like the guy who was the dinosaur consultant on Jurassic Park was like, I want to make a dinosaur movie, and then he didn't end up making the movie. And they brought in the director of, he had directed the We're Back dinosaur cartoon movie, and they brought him in to direct. These are the only two movies he's directed. A guy died making the movie.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't that movie all CG? How does somebody die? Did the computer drop on them?
No, they filmed some live action footage.
Okay.
And it's very sad, obviously.
Well, yeah. But not to make light of somebody's death, but
yeah. So it's just crazy stuff. At one point, all of the characters were named after biblical people, and the main dinosaur was Noah, and he had visions of the future. Crazy stuff was happening in the development of this movie and this ride, and I just think about it a lot.
Oh,
so
my goodness,
that's my dinosaur time.
Well, before we leave Beastly Kingdom, I'm just gonna let everyone think about what could have been. One of the attractions that was being worked on for Beastly Kingdom was a maze where at the center of the maze you would find a unicorn who would communicate with you through infrasound. So you wouldn't hear it with your ears. It would feel like it was coming in, like the unicorn was talking to you telepathically.
Ooh.
What? Okay.
So infrasound is basically sound that you hear, but you don't register hearing with your ears because it's so low.
Ah.
It feels like it's like coming from inside your, like it feels like it's coming from inside your head, because that's how you kind, that's how your brain registers it.
Weird.
So that could have been, and I will admit, Flight of Passage is great, Alien Chipotle is fine, but we could have had a unicorn maze with infrasound. And I am going to die mad about this. It's going to be on my gravestone.
Do it.
Still salty about Beastly Kingdom. Last up at Tokyo Disney Sea, actually the mentioning the 20,000 Leagues reminded me. When you do 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea there, you do see Atlanteans, you see mermaids, and you see a big squid. And it's really cool. And it kind of has like, it feels like that ride really hasn't been updated since Tokyo Disney Sea opened in like 2002, 2003. So it's kind of charming and quaint and fun. And I think that's it for the Disney parks. Anything else anyone can think of before we move on?
No.
That's Disney IP.
Right. Yeah, I feel like we can't really be like, well, you can see a 6-foot tall mouse at a... Because, I mean, you can, but, you know, that's kind of expected. Busch Gardens in Williamsburg, I haven't been to the one in Tampa, so I don't know what you can run into there. I know they've got, like, lots of real-life animals, but at Busch Gardens Europe, which is the one in Virginia, there is a place called the Land of the Dragons,
yes!
Which is a children's play area.
Oh my gosh, I spent so much time in the Land of Dragons when...
Yeah!
Because I was a Dragon Tales kid. So Land of the Dragons was like my thing when we went there. I was super into that.
So it's just off the Germany area. It's just a cute little play area. There's a couple of like little kid rides. Mm-hmm. There's like a merry-go-round and I think like maybe a kiddie coaster, and everything's dragon themed. It's all these really adorable like chubby little dragons getting into mischief.
Very cute.
When Chris and I went to Busch Gardens in 2021, it was pouring because Hurricane Elsa was just on the other side of the state. And so there is nothing more surreal than walking around an abandoned children's play area when it's just pouring rain, taking pictures of dragons. Deeply weird experience, but nice to be able to take that time to really look at the dragons and not have to worry about tripping over any kids.
So then, at Knott's Berry Farm in California, I previously did a new case about the Catawampus.
Yeah, you did.
Which is their little creature. And so you can hear about that in episode 180.
And we'll link that in the show notes. Beast.
So, but the Catawampus is just, it's just a little guy. So, you know, go look into that.
I think you have some from Efteling.
Yeah, because now that you talked a lot about all the parks that I'm...
Yeah, tell me about the park I haven't been to that I'm gagging
yes,
to
please.
Go to.
So I wanted to talk about Efteling because that's one of my favorite theme park. That I don't know a lot of theme park yet, but this one is definitely my favorite. It's a fantasy and fairy tale theme park in the Netherlands. And since it's fantasy... themed, there are a lot of fantastic beasts all around, and yeah, it's so cool. So there are a lot of fairies of all kind, like little one, human sized one, child one. I mean, you have fairies everywhere. So yeah, that's not exactly the same fairies from the Wizarding World, but yeah, still a lot of fairies, and of course at least a couple of dragons. There is one in the fairy tale forest. So just to talk about the fairy tale forest, it's just the most amazing thing ever. You are in a real forest and you very, very big forest, and you just walk around and you find little village or little place that are referencing different traditional fairy tales.
Oh, cool.
And it's so great. You have the music, it's wonderful. It's very old, but it stays, I don't know, very cute, and I loved it. I went there two times, one in summer and one in fall, and during fall it's just gorgeous. It's so, so cool.
Oh, it's just been so magical.
Yeah, and in one of the corner of the forest, you can find a dragon in top of a little house. I don't remember what tale it was, but yeah, you definitely have a dragon there. And another one, a much bigger one, is in the wooden coaster Joris and the Drac, and it's a thing around the story of George and the Dragon. And so, yeah, it's the fight between George and the dragon, and you ride a coaster around this giant dragon. And at some point, I think the dragon used to breathe fire, but when I went there, it didn't. But the second time I went there, they were doing some work on the ride, so maybe now it's breathe dragon again. I'm not sure, but So yeah, a very cool. large dragon there. Wow. And you have, it's not really a thunderbird, but it makes me think a lot of a thunderbird. It's the Ride Fogo Rock, and it's actually inspired by Sinbad and Sinbad the Sailor. And you have this giant, eagle that it makes me think of the Thunderbird, because the ride, it's a coaster, but in the dark. And at some point, you are supposed to... It's the moment in the story where you... I still didn't understand, because, of course, it's in Netherlands, so they speak... how you say it in English? And they speak...
Dutch,
yes, Dutch. And so yeah, I didn't understand everything. But I don't know if you fly on the eagle or if you are captured by the eagle. I'm not sure. But either way, you go very fast in the dark, and you have some lightning, and you see the eagle. So yeah, lightning, eagle, for me it's a thunderbird. So
it definitely has thunderbird vibes. I googled it.
Yeah, because what you see on Google is the huge eagle, and it's in the front of the ride, and you pass under it to go inside the ride. So yeah, and another one, I'm not sure if it's a five-headed dragon or winged hydra. I don't know, but it's a creature with five heads that breathe fire, has winged, and it's a spectacular creature who moves and breathes fire. It's not from a wide, it's from the show Ravelling, and it's a great show with fantasy knights, and they are fighting, and they are a good queen, fairy queen, and a bad wizard, and it's so great. And you have this huge it looks like it's more mechanical, it's not a real creature, but it looks like a creature, and it's huge, and it breathes fire,
so
and
cool.
Yeah.
So after Epic Universe, after we all go there,
we all have to go to Efteling.
Yeah!
Let's go to Efteling and Fantasia Land. Like, we gotta make it happen.
Yeah. I never went there, and I want to go there too. But yeah, Efteling, it's very cool. You have other rides around, I don't know, just one of my favorite ones is, it's called Drumfloft. It's the flight of the dream, something like that, dream flight. And it's you are just flying through fairy lands, and it's so beautiful. I love it so much.
I wanted to, because I just thought of this while we were talking about Efteling, just give a quick shout out to the abandoned dragon at the Las Vegas Excalibur Hotel. Go look it up. It's kind of freaky, but the Excalibur Hotel used to have this horrible show with this bad dragon animatronic and this bad Merlin animatronic that it was ultimately abandoned. So this giant dragon animatronic is just underneath the hotel, and people have like snuck in to see it.
That's dope.
So yeah, go look it up if abandoned animatronics don't scare you.
Ah, okay. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Not a theme park, but a themed thing. Las Vegas is a theme park. Let's be real with ourselves.
It is a theme park. If a city, an entire city were a theme park.
Yeah.
I also did want to shout out as well that I was talking about the Sinbad ride at Efteling reminded me of Sinbad's Storybook Voyage at Tokyo DisneySea as well. Because you do run across, again, the rock, the Thunderbird, and you also come across a tribe of hyper-intelligent apes that Sinbad works with at one point. Oh. And there's also Sinbad's companion, which is a tiger cub named Shandu, who is just the cutest. So lots of Fantastic Beasts and Sinbad. Any other beasties that we can think of before we wrap it up?
Yeah, so I have this dog. She's kind of like a little velociraptor, so...
Ducky is indeed a fantastic beast.
She is a thick velociraptor. She uses those teeth, so...
Well, we hope that you have enjoyed our discussion of Fantastic Beasts around theme parks. If you think of anything that we missed, because I just realized we definitely missed the Maleficent Dragon in the Festival of Fantasy Parade.
Oh, yeah.
The one in Fantasmic that have both caught on fire at separate times, I think.
The Festival of Fantasy one has caught on fire. The Disneyland Fantasmic one caught on fire and was completely destroyed.
Yes.
Wow.
But yeah, that's a whole other story.
So if you can think of any other Fantastic Beasts that we have overlooked or for places we have not been, like if you're... local Six Flags has a ride that's like about a phoenix or whatever, write in, tell us about it. We'd love to hear.
I'm sure there's some phoenix rides.
Oh yeah.
And I believe that leads us into the time turner. Shannon?
A few times should do it, love.
Yes, welcome to the time turner. Today, since we were talking about theme parks, I decided to talk about the founding of Universal Studios.
Oh, fun! Yeah.
So, just to start, if you go to universalpictures.com/about, they have a really quick little history thing, and they also have, you can, like, scroll through their logos over the past 100 years, because they were founded in 1912. Very old studios, the oldest, American studio and the fourth oldest major film studio in the world, after two French studios and a Danish studio. So technically Universal was founded by, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 dudes. but really the guy that everybody talks about is Carl Laemmle. So Laemmle was an immigrant from Germany, and in 1906 he opened his own Nickelodeon, which was what people called movie theaters, because movies were a nickel. Whoa, imagine that. So he opened it in Chicago. It was called the White Front. It does not appear to exist anymore. Sorry, Anne.
Ah, darn.
I know. So it was hugely successful. And then, you know, it wasn't the first movie theater in Chicago, but like he was a very good businessman. So it was very successful. And then a lot of other theaters opened, kind of copying his business model. So then he was like, okay, well, everyone has a movie theater now, so I'm going to start distributing movies. So he began film distribution, and he founded the Laemmle Film Service. So then around this time, the Motion Picture Patents Company, a.k.a. the Edison Trust, began. That was in 1908. And that meant a lot of bad things, basically. It's called the Edison Trust because it was basically... Thomas Edison did it. Ah. And it said, it was like, oh, studios can no longer sell movies to distributors. They have to rent them. And also, we're in charge of like all aspects of movie making because it's all Edison's technology and stuff. So Laemmle really didn't like that. And he challenged it. And ultimately the Edison Trust, ended in 1915, so it did not last very long. But in this period, because Edison was in charge of all film technology, basically, Laemmle was like, okay, well, what can I be in charge of? So he began advertising based on the stars of movies, which we still do, obviously. So that became a huge thing, and that was basically him being like, Well, I can do this. I'm going to turn these actors into stars. So then in 1909, he founded his own studio and production company in New York City, with the studio actually being in New Jersey. So that was the Independent Moving Pictures, IMP. In 1912, IMP merged with a bunch of other companies that were all owned by these other dudes. And that became Universal Film Manufacturing Company, now Universal Pictures. And Lemley was the president when they officially incorporated, which was on April 30th, 1912, in New York City. Still not in California yet. He did later then buy out all the other companies. So, it's all Lemley. These other dudes were just kind of there. So then, filmmaking began to move over to California and Hollywood. So, he moved Universal over there. He opened, at the time, the world's largest movie production facility, Universal City Studios, on a 230-acre farm that he bought. And so that opened on March 15th, 1915. It was the largest studio in Hollywood for a decade, but they actually mostly produced like really cheap movies for to distribute to small towns. They did not own theaters. Most movie studios at the time owned their own movie theaters. So they created a reference guide to this like three-tier branding system to give to theater owners and to audiences to basically be like, hey, this is what this movie is. So they created this in 1916, and their three brands were Red Feather Photo Plays, which were low-budget feature films, Bluebird Photo Plays, which were mainstream feature releases and other more ambitious productions, and then Jewel Movies, which were the more prestige motion pictures with high budgets and prominent actors. Quick diversion, one of the Jewel directors was Lois Weber, who was one of the few female directors in Hollywood at the time. Film historian Anthony Slide said, along with D.W. Griffith, Weber was the American cinema's first genuine auteur, a filmmaker involved in all aspects of production and one who utilized the motion picture to put across her own ideas and philosophies. So, meanwhile, starting in the mid-1920s, Universal was like, let's get even bigger, and they started making Super Jewels. Unfortunately, almost all Universal films produced between 1912 and 1930 were lost in a fire. Their first film was The Dawn of Netta, released on June 24th, 1912. You can look up the synopsis of it, but yeah, it does not exist anymore. You can look up like a list of all the films they released in those kind of two decades, and they all say lost. It's very sad.
Yeah, Universal has a nasty history of things mysteriously burning.
Yeah.
Like that has happened more than once in Universal's history.
Yeah. So Lemley continued to be like, no, I don't want to open our own movie theaters, which worked out because that was ultimately banned through the Paramount Decree in 1948. Studios could not own their own movie theaters. Although there was a court case a few years ago that ultimately led to the ban being lifted, except by the time that decision came through, it was mid-2020. And then it officially, went into effect in 2022. So I don't believe any studios have opened their own movie theaters because they were like, streaming, streaming, streaming.
They were like, why? We just spent this money, all this money on streaming services.
Yeah.
It's funny because in France, the biggest chain, I guess, of movie theater is the groupment of the two biggest French studios. It's Pathé Gaumont, and they have the biggest. It's not the only chain of a company of movie theater, but it's the largest, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's connected to studios, but they don't show only their movies. They show every movies, but yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense to me why it was banned, because it's like, we don't want monopolies on stuff. But then it was unbanned, so I don't know.
So now we're going to get monopolies. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, Disney already owns.
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
So since the, you know, Hollywood studio opened in 1915, it was always open to tourists. Well, not always, but it was open from the beginning. So for about 25 cents, which is about $7.65
in today's money. Wow, good luck getting into this WB studio tour for $7 today. Jeez.
I know. Be like, no, look, I've got my $7. Visitors could come in and they could watch the filming of silent movies, basically. So that stopped when sound was introduced in the movies because they didn't know how to soundproof. So tourism was closed at the studio for a while, but then Disneyland opened in 1955 and Universal was like, well, we have our studio right here. So then they opened with the Backlot Tour in 1961 and then expanded, and Universal Studios Hollywood, the theme park, opened in 1964. So that's kind of the early history that covers over 50 years, but another diversion to talk more about Disney. And Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, which has a fascinating history. And I think it is very interesting to look at the founding of Disney, which has partially become very mythologized, but it's also very, like, American dream. Uh-huh. These two brothers went to California and founded their cartoon studio.
With nothing more than a suitcase and a dream.
Yes. And then Universal is like, this guy bought every studio. But, so Walt Disney and Roy O. Disney, his brother, founded the Disney Brothers Cartoon Studio in 1923. So this is 11 years after Universal was incorporated. And 8 years after Universal moved to Hollywood. So they're making, you know, their short films. In 1927, Charles Mintz, who was from Winkler Pictures, is it? I wrote Winkler Pictures, so that must be it. You'll notice his last name's not Winkler. He was married to a Winkler, and basically just took over their company. But so, Winkler was the Disney's distributor, and so Charles Mintz comes to Walt and now Byworks and is like, hey, can you create a character that we can sell to Universal, because they were running out of money, to rival all of the cat characters out there, like Felix the cat and stuff. So don't make a cat, but make a cute animal. So Walt and Ub Iwerks created Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, and Mintz signed a contract with Universal for them to make 26 Oswald cartoons. Universal was like, sure, great. They came back with their first Oswald cartoon, and Universal didn't like it. But then they came back with the second, which is Trolley Troubles, and Universal loved it, and they released it. It was hugely successful. So that's 1927. By 1928, Mintz and Universal signed a second contract for 3 more years of Oswald cartoons. Meanwhile, Walt was getting kind of paranoid because Ub Iwerks was like, hey, Charles Mintz and George Winkler are trying to steal our animators. And Walt was like, I think that maybe they're gonna like try to undermine us, and he was right. So he began secretly meeting with other studios, other distributors. In February 1928, he met with Mintz in New York City to try to negotiate a more profitable contract. That didn't work out. Mintz was like, no, you're gonna get some pennies. So then it's the very famous story of Walt is on the train ride home from New York City, and the like mythologized story is that's when he comes up with Mickey Mouse. Well, he was like, hey, I have an idea. What if I make up a character and I keep the rights to it? So then he and Iwerks ultimately developed Mickey Mouse while they were still finishing their contract at Oswald Cartoons. And they released Steamboat Willie in November of that year. So then they cut ties with Charles Mintz and Winkler and Universal, and so Universal got to keep Oswald. So then Mintz is like, okay, well, I don't need Disney and Iwerks. I'm going to open my own studio with all the animators I stole. So he does that. He starts to produce the Oswald cartoons. Two of the animators, Hugh Harmon and Rudolf Ising, who have careers of their own you can go look into, but they went to Universal, they went to Lemley, and were like, hey, Mintz sucks. Can you get rid of him and let us make the Oswald cartoons? And Lemley was like, that's a great idea. So he did cut ties with Mintz. So Mintz went through all this, stole all these Disney animators to make the Oswald cartoons, and then Universal was like, never mind.
Embarrassing.
But then Lemley did not hire Harmon and Ising to do it.
Embarrassing. He was just like,
yeah, he was like, why am I even hiring other people to do this? I have my own studio. So then he chose Walter Lantz to head Oswald Cartoons just directly there at Universal. And so they continued to make Oswald the Lucky Rabbit cartoons for several decades, and he appeared in comic books, but kind of became eclipsed by Woody the Woodpecker. And then the name Oswald became associated with Lee Harvey Oswald after the JFK assassination, so Oswald kind of went away for a long time. Then Bob Iger came around and became CEO of Disney. So this was in 2006. He's in the middle of buying everything, because that's what Bob Iger does. And he was like, I don't just want Marvel and Pixar. I also want Oswald back, because I'm Bob Iger. So he went to Universal and made a deal. They gave Disney Oswald back, and Disney gave them a human man, ABC sportscaster Al Michaels. Which is just the craziest deal to me, and I just imagine being Al Michaels and getting that call like, hey man, you work for Universal now because we wanted the Cartoon Rabbit. But yeah, that's the history of Universal and how really the histories of Universal and Disney are intertwined.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much. I didn't know how intertwined it was, and it's funny to think about it now that we speak about it regarding the theme parks, but yeah, it comes from much older history.
Yeah.
Well,
fascinating.
And, just real quick, circling back to the White Front Theater, if anyone is local, that was located at 1253 North Milwaukee, which is right on the corner of Milwaukee and Division in Wicker Park. So if you happen to be in the Wicker Park area, it looks like now it's a spa. It's a new building, because the building that the theater was in was demolished back in 2015.
I was going to be like, if it burned down in a fire.
It did not burn down in a fire, no. It was demolished in 2015 after being a footlocker. Now it's a spa. And actually, if you are in the Chicagoland area to go to the Cauldron, the mixology, there's like a Harry Potter themed mixology experience Marjolaine and I went to before Leaky last summer. It's actually not far from there. So if you happen to be near there for the Cauldron, you could also go see the first movie theater, which is pretty cool.
Or the place where the first movie theater
was. It's not the first movie theater anymore. But you can maybe get a facial tightening or something.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, thank you, Shannon. That was fascinating.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That wraps it up for this week's episode of Speak Beastie. Our podcast question this week is, what's your favorite Fantastic Beast related memory from a theme park? We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And you could still leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is. People are like, just that way, you know, we still get out there and people are still notified of it. They search up Fantastic Beasts. They'll be like, wow, this podcast may be on a potentially permanent hiatus, but they sure do have a lot of good ratings. Maybe I'll give them a listen.
Yeah, and Sue will be part of history. I mean, at some point, new fans will discover this amazing franchise, and they will want to find the best Fantastic Beasts podcast. So they need to find us.
Yeah, so rate us. Liz, that way, you're helping out the future. You're just doing future people a solid.
Yeah.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, on Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also still support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. We do still have some content coming out in the upcoming weeks that's Patreon exclusive. And our $5 tier on Patreon will get a chance to be part of the recording of episode 200. So if you would like to participate in that last episode, now's your chance to do so. Well, none of us want to sign off. Yeah. But yeah, this was a good episode, and we'll see y'all for the big celebratory 200.
Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us.
I'm Amy.
I'm Anne.
I'm Marjolaine.
And I'm Shannon. Case closed.